mics on? Okay. All right. Good morning. We're going to start with revenue recognition, and because of the importance of getting to classification and measurement, we're going to try to do this in 15 to 20 minutes. So try to be succinct and try to be incremental from what the prior board member talked about. So I'll turn it over to the team, and we'll try to get done as fast as we can.
Sure, and I'll be quick here so that we can move on. So we're still in paper 174A, and this is the first topic that was talked about in this paper. It's collectability. It starts in paragraph 5, and there it talks about some of the current tentative board decisions, which, again, are also in Appendix A to this paper. And then also in paragraph 5, A through G goes through some of the feedback that we've heard. And as you know, this topic also intersects with constraints. So to the extent there's a price concession, it's deemed to be or thought to be variable consideration, and so that ties back into the constraints. So some of our discussion that we had yesterday is also relevant here. I'd say broadly the feedback was they're just not quite clear how to deal with collectability in the model, because we've got a little bit of in step one and we've got a little bit in step three, whether you have a price concession. So I think the general theme of the feedback is be clear with how you want to treat these things in these types of transactions where there is this risk. What do you want to occur? So on page four, right after paragraph 5, in between paragraph 5 and 6, in the middle of page 4, are what we've laid out as the alternatives. So A would be some drafting improvements, and I think the staff definitely recommends making some of these changes, because I think there's a lot of words about price concessions as we had it in the drafting, and I think what we heard is we overemphasized that, and so we need to clean some of that up. That would, at a minimum, we would be recommending that. That would be A. And then for the board's consideration are two other items, that being alternative B, what we've described as a flexibility threshold. So this would be in step one, clarity that there is a minimum level of assurance that you need about the customer's ability to pay in order to pass step one. So we think about writing that in step one as a gating item. And then the other alternative is alternative C. We've talked about this one as well. And this would be more of a measurement alternative. So if you pass step one, and you could think about still including something like B in step one, if you want to adjust the enforceable amount or the amount entitled to, then we could think about one of two options, and that was in C, we either have a measurement option, which would be similar to the 2010 ED approach, so you would adjust the transaction price for, again, making it clear, a subset, not all transactions, but a subset of transactions that would exhibit some risk to something closer to an adjusted transaction price. Or we could do something more similar to the 2011 ED for that subset of transactions and use a presentation alternative. So with that, I'll turn it over to the board. Any questions? Or
Kristen, can I ask, does the staff have a clear preference for what to do here? You guys are working with us day in, day out. I would really like to hear your opinion on what you think should be done, instead of us going over 10 possible permutations.
I guess personally, and I don't know that we've all are in exactly the same place, I think there is some merit to doing something further. I think we would all think, just based on the feedback, that as we sit today, we could further that. Now, whether that's something like B, it can work, and I think there is a fair amount of individuals that would support something like that. It makes it clear. It's easier to apply. I think it's more consistent with something that we have in U.S. GAAP. U.S. GAAP and IFRS, there is kind of a precursor to getting into revenue recognition. So that would be why some might support B. I think C also can work and can give you similar outcomes. So I think either B or C would probably be something that we would be supportive.
Not A? A at a minimum, I think we were saying. A is drafting improvements, and it's the minimum amount that we need to do. I think A could work as well. We haven't.
Yeah. The tension point that came up in our exercise in the U.S. was that there was a lot of concern about having to determine was it a collectability or a price concession. And the impression I got from the stakeholders was we didn't need to force that judgment. And that the B approach, aligning with the view yesterday on 1B, and aligning the threshold would help them avoid needing to make a distinction as the collectability of price concession. The thing I think we'd have to additionally consider is once you've recognized revenue because you felt it was collectible and then it subsequently was not, that should be a bad debt expense, not a reduction of revenue. But if you did not recognize revenue because you didn't meet the threshold and you subsequently were able to meet it, then that should be revenue. That was kind of the impression that I was getting from the but others attended that. So why don't we go with Gary?
I agree. I think the collectability issue is more time is being spent on it. I think we should assume most companies know exactly why they're collecting or not collecting their revenue. I think bad debts is well understood. You expected to collect it. The company expected to pay you. But, bad things happen sometimes to people. I think that's a business expense. I would, for purposes of drafting, I would remove the bad debt type collectability issues out of this section, or at least segregate it. I think it confuses it. It's not a price concession. I think price concessions, rebates, coupons, volume discounts, and so on and so on, they're already either contractually or by policy or practice understood and agreed. The only question is when do you hit your thresholds on it. I think existing practice actually works pretty well in that regard. So I'm not sure whether that this is a step two or step three or step five issue, but that's what I think.
So Gary, what option are you choosing for here? That's not clear to me.
Not sure which option I pick. If this is what I think the answer should be, I think it probably pulling bad debts out, segregating that. I guess that's a drafting improvement. I think the rest is classic rebate coupon, volume discount things. I think that stays invariable.
Would think that you'd still have to assess at contract inception whether there's a significant credit risk.
Well, I think you have to do that anyways.
But view A would say you don't have to do that. That's what the debate has been about. View B says there has to be some level of assurance, and we need to establish that it is collectible.
I think you view B.
Yeah,
so it sounds to me like your view.
I'm not totally sure, which view it is. I just think bad debt expense, it's revenue when it's a bad debt expense.
Sounds like AB.
I'd just like to support Gary in his general thrust. I think this is what we're talking about is a small subset, and we've made a big picture of it. We even wanted to change the presentation for everybody at one stage, so I'd be strongly against C. And I just think I don't know that we need to do too much more than just drafting.
Wegu?
I try to make it as simple as possible. And I have two preconditions to offer my view. Firstly, as I said yesterday, I hope we can finish as early as possible. And secondly, we should stick on our latest decision. That was, I think, on this issue about May or April. The two decisions are so clear. Firstly, we recognize the amount you will be entitled to receive. My understanding is gross amount. The price concession we discussed, not the rebate, discount, as Gary mentioned, the price concession we are discussing in the past 2-3 months, I don't think it's within the amount you're entitled to receive. Contractually, you're entitled to receive is the gross amount. And secondly, we debate many times to recognize impairment into expense rather than as adjacent. This was not one I like it. I prefer to recognize adjacent to revenue. On these two bases, I would prefer a much more simpler view A. Please look at three proposals from start. The paragraph 6. You know, I will only keep A, and I don't want B and C. B and C still bring back the price concession and quite this scene, type of scenes, and confuse ourselves. So I think it is make it very, very simple and clear, and not commingle price concession and credit risk with day one the transaction price. I don't think it's necessary. And as Ian and Gary said, there may be some unique case, but it is so rare, and I don't think we should change our basic model at all.
Tom?
I support A in considering all of A, but I encourage the staff to evaluate whether the pendulum might swing too far if you strip everything out of it to implementation guidance. And we've gone back and forth. I agree there's too much in there, but you got to make an appropriate call as to the balance between in and out. But I really strongly support B, too. And even though I've been an adjacent to revenue person over time, I'm not going to fight that again. But the problem, if we don't do B, is that they may make a consideration at contract inception that customer credit risk is a price concession, or there will be doubt about it and treat it as a price concession. If you do that, credit risk will go through the top line throughout the contract. And I don't see that as a good outcome to have credit risk running through the top line. I would rather have credit risk, especially for the most significant credit risk contracts, in bad debts expense. And the way to do that is to introduce a collectibility threshold. Because once you exceed that threshold, any subsequent credit risk problems will be bad debts. But if you start recognizing the transaction price as variable before that threshold, it'll run through the top line. And I don't see us serving anyone well by having the most significant credit risk up in the top line for discounted items and for these items, and the least significant credit risk being in bad debts expense in those contracts.
Pat McConnell?
I would support B for many of the reasons that Tom just cited. My only hesitancy is that we've discussed finding a threshold several times and we've never been able to come to an agreement. However, yesterday we indicated we were going to put some sort of confidence level in the constraint. And if we stick with that, then I would support B here, and I would recommend the same confidence level in both places, because then it's consistent whether it's a price constraint or a collectibility issue. But if we don't get the constraint in the confidence in the constraint, if we don't get a confidence level in the constraint, then I don't think we can get one here, and I would go back to A.
Okay. Mark?
I just don't want to minimize the issue, because today it's not a big deal whether it's a price concession or credit risk on day one. The reason it's rare today and the reason it doesn't matter today is because there's a collectibility threshold. If we just do A, and we're setting up an arbitrage between a credit risk issue and a price concession, you're giving companies every incentive to structure their contracts to get the gross amount of revenue higher and call it a price concession, right? And so then I feel like we have to do something beyond A. I'm with Pat McConnell and Tom. B is fine. I'm fine with options within C as well, but I just don't want to minimize A.
Philippe?
Well, I'm on the same starting point as Gary. I think in most cases, companies transact with customers which have a normal, acceptable credit risk. Yes, there is a price discussion. Yes, there is some negotiations. Yes, there is price reductions. But they start with an amount which they think they are entitled to recover. That is our starting point. And yes, there are certain types of contracts where you don't know even after all that whether you will collect. And maybe they deserve a special treatment. But I think in most cases, my starting point would be the net price after taking into account the price reductions. And yes, some of the price reductions may be caused by the assessment of the customer credit risk. You maybe charge less to a customer which has a lower credit risk. But that is part and difficult to distinguish in this discussion. Why is there a cost reduction? Credit risk or other reasons? So the starting point is that you are entitled to a certain amount that you expect to recover. Anything which expense later on, as Gary said, is bad debt expense. So whether that deserves to have a collectivity threshold for all contracts, I don't think so. I think only a subset, solution C, would deserve having this specific focus on collectibility. I think in most cases, companies have more a commercial discussion than a concern with collectibility. So C is my answer.
Larry?
I agree with Wei Guo that we have to keep it simple. However, I think the only way to keep it simple is not through drafting improvements, because we've tried that. And the more we try to draft it, the more we're going to confuse the issue. And I say, let's just pick a threshold and put it in there and be done with it.
You agree with Pat that the ideal would be the threshold would be the same between collective?
I think so.
Yeah.
Can I ask the staff, that does the staff feel confident? Do they have a high degree of confidence that they can design this threshold and that it can be identical for both the constraints and the collectibility?
I mean,
not
the answer is yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do anything you want.
No. Can you do something that makes sense? That is not.
I think the only thing I'd say is that it depends on what type of transactions you're trying to knock out in step one, that you think there's too much collectability risk, so you don't want it to pass through the model.
Right.
Do you want that to be a very small set of transactions?
So.
Because then when it's time to constraint, if you make it the same confidence level, it means that it's going to be very difficult for people to say that they can include an estimate of variable consideration if they need to have such a high degree of confidence. So that would be my only concern, that if you really just want to knock out a very small number of contracts with this collectibility threshold, if you make the constraint the same threshold, it's going to make estimating maybe too tight. It's going to make it too tight for people to include variable consideration.
You think the constraint is going to be too tight then?
Yes, that's my view.
But I think what we have to think is today people are not arguing that the threshold for collectibility causes problems. That specifically came up at our outreach saying you are solving a problem that does not exist.
Right.
Why would you do that? And that's what B is about is there's a threshold in both U.S. GAAP and I understand IFRS. Well, why do we feel the need to change that?
So it does not necessarily have to be the same as the threshold in the constraint.
It does not, but you could take what is the current threshold for collectibility and run it through a constraint and see if that works for a constraint.
Isn't that reasonably sure?
So if it's so simple, why didn't we try to fix it in the image?
Mary?
I agree with drafting. I have some hesitation about over-engineering collective in explicit, especially quantitative, collectibility threshold, although I think the concept is there. I think we have two principles, one are the parties committed, and that's a combination of commercial substance and, you know, committed to perform, and the other is that credit risk is bad debt expense. I think a lot of the things that we're tying ourselves in knots about now are not really credit risk. And, you know, they're what I would call rack rate issues. You know, you have a published price list that you actually don't really enforce much of the time. And then we're trying to figure out when is this price concession, how do we engineer it? We put it into variable consideration and go through all these hoops, which is why we get the double layer of constraints. So, A, I agree with the staff that we need drafting improvements. B, I can see, because we're asking them what to bring us back, that it's worth trying B, that it's worth maybe trying to be aligned and not aligned with the constraint. But I would tend to think that we had a good example that we discussed about a real estate sale that people say not committed, doesn't pass the basic contract test. Then we had the other group of examples, which are healthcare, which to me seemed more rack rate issues, and that's not credit risk. That's figuring out what are the actual terms.
No, clear credit risk.
Well,
they can't pay,
but you never actually expect to enforce that amount, not just on them, but on You've negotiated away from that price list for virtually every customer. It's not a substantive term. So I think, you know, if we can filter out those oddballs, you know, remind people of the principle: credit risk is an expense. And you have to explain why something is actually a price adjustment that goes against revenue. That's the exception. So agree that we have to do A. Worth trying B, but I think we could over-engineer something for a problem that's concentrated in relatively few circumstances, and we shouldn't screw up everything else for that.
As I understand it, U.S. GAAP and IFRS are converged on this point today. Mm-hmm. It works in practice. Why are we, I don't want to belabor the point, but why are we changing something? Why, we have a constraint, it's converged, and there isn't a problem in practice.
Apparently it's not converged.
PK, you want to get on that?
Yeah, threshold. Very quickly, I think I completely agree that what Jim said, it is working in practice, but we are changing the basic construct of the model. One is transfer of control. If you transfer a control, collectibility is not an issue. So I think since we are changing from a risk and rewards kind of a notion to a control notion, the collectibility does not figure out. That's why the boards did not put it till today. I am not opposed to putting a threshold if that is the collective wisdom of this group. I'm fine with it. But for 10 years or 8 years, we have been fighting because it doesn't fit with the model. But so be it. I think my only request to the staff, if they are doing the B, and I am not going to oppose it for the sake of convergence and for the sake of going with the crowd, which is new to me, I think you need to come back to us with the basis of conclusion. When you bring the next month, I would request you to come back with the basis of conclusion, what you would put it, and how do you support this with the overall model. If you do that, and if everybody is on page, I'm happy with it.
Yeah. Can we just ask one question? Those that are supporting it going to something like B, do you also support where you are? Meaning, if you fail step one, you're in what we've kind of described as a deposit method.
Yeah, right? I think
that basis we can support.
Because we need to think about those people who failed it, whether deposit method is the right thing to do, or asset recovery method, or I don't know what method. So that's why the basis of conclusion is extremely important to articulate two points. Whether how does it comport with the overall model of transfer of control? Second is that what do you do? Should we keep the para 14, which we have in the current draft, intact, or should we do something more?
Okay. Hal?
I'll try to be incremental to Hans's request. I generally agree with PK, and I think to a large degree, Mary. I would stick with A and keep this as mostly drafting. My primary reason here is I think there's tremendous informational content in knowing what your sales are, excluding concessions and collectibility issues. Once you start to mix those two, I think you actually lose informational content. And I want to know, basically, when you're stretching for, either from a credit perspective or you're giving away concessions and sales to gross up that number, I think, unlike Mark, I'm not concerned about you giving me a gross number, because I'm going to look at the relationship between that gross number and the concessions and bad debt expense, if you will. And it's the relationship and where are you in a credit cycle that tell me a lot. So I'd really stick with A, and I would not be eliminating or putting in any thresholds.
A won't give you that. You need C.
Right.
A won't give you the gross number, not on price concessions and variable consideration. It will not
be below the gross margin line. It would
that's,
be below.
That's fine
for you.
That's
but
fine. I don't care. I'm not as concerned about looking as long as I'm separating the two.
You're not separate. Price concessions are in the top line, period.
Fine.
Chung Wu.
Thank you. Just one simple question on alternative B. If we include this collectability threshold in step one, is it quite fundamentally similar to the including threshold, collective threshold in the recognition criteria? It seems to me, go ahead. Please answer the question.
I think yes. So what that would mean is you would not kind of pass go until you met certain conditions in step one.
Yeah.
So that then that would preclude, so you would not recognize until you got conditions that would pass step one, and then you would continue through the model.
Yeah, but interestingly, our conceptual framework, DP, is proposed. All uncertainty is must be reflected in the measurement rather than the recognition. So if we choose this alternative B, is quite not aligned with the new development in the conceptual framework. That's one concern. Another thing is, you know, based on your fieldwork after July meeting, many constituents said, you know, there's no big difference in differentiated price concession and some kind of impairment issue. But why are you suggesting, because, you know, this new alternatives, because, you know, there's no problem in practical world?
I think it all depends. Again, if you're, it's likely not to come into play in many circumstances, but I think what you'd be saying is similar to other things that would fail step one. So you don't have a true commitment between the parties. The terms haven't been settled. You cannot get all the negotiated terms together in order to pass step one. And I think what you'd be saying is similarly, you need the customer to have the capacity, a significant level of capacity to pay in order to actually be committed to the contract, to have the terms be enforceable, to then continue through the model. That's what I think you'd be saying if you failed step one.
So what I hear from this dialogue is that we don't need the staff to continue to research alternative C. So we can take C off the table. That the staff, we're asking the staff to come back in October with drafting improvements in A and compare that to B, where the threshold would be aligned with the constraint that we talked about yesterday.
Well, I think there was a very good caution that could also be problematical. That the constraint would then become very tight. So
you're suggesting they explore a different constraint also.
Well, if the staff decides that is a severe problem, they should mention that. And I would really hope that the staff can give us a very clear recommendation as to, having looked at all the options, what is the preferred one. Because, you know, every time that we tinker with one element of the model, something else goes wrong. And you know, at first sight, it seems very logical if you have a threshold in the constraint to have the same one as in a collectibility, but it leads to all sorts of problems. So the staff has all this complete oversight of everything that we do. So I really ask them, and it also goes for the whole discussion that we had yesterday with 6 variants and 20 permutations, to come with very clear recommendations as to what we should do. And if you present us with choices, don't make it more than 2.
Daryl.
Just a quick comment and then a question. I don't believe that alternative A is going to be sufficient by itself to satisfy what I understand to be the concerns of those constituents that are concerned about this area. So I'm an alternative B guy. I think that that's an efficient way to do it. It's understood today, so I think that we should explore that further. My question is this, and this is a question that I asked in a small group meeting, and I just want to confirm my understanding. In paragraph 9C1, it talks about those contracts that fail the threshold in step one, and then it says that there would be no revenue recognized until all the obligations have been performed and all consideration promised. I believe that's what PK was referring to as the deposit method. Would another alternative possibility be what I think the staff has called the installment method, which would be if you've performed all of your obligations, then to the extent you've actually received the cash and it's not refundable, then why couldn't you recognize that as revenue?
Maybe I'm missing. I think that is what the deposit method is. So you've performed everything you have to do,
right,
but you're still collecting.
And my reading of 9C1 is you'd have to collect all the consideration promised before you'd recognize any.
Sorry, that no. So it's more all of the performance has occurred and whatever cash collected at that point, as long as it's non-refundable cash received, you would recognize it.
Okay, excellent.
Good catch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're going to bring us alternative A improvements as well as aligning the threshold between collectability and constraints so we can vote it out in October? Okay. Those are done, right?
Gary. This is definitely your last. We will continue discussing revenue recognition for at least 2 more years, but it's your time to go. And I do want to thank you for the huge contribution you've made to this effort. I'm really sorry that we couldn't finish up completely before you left, but I promise you it will not take much longer. Thank you very much. You're returning to PwC. I'm sure you'll be continue to be very successful.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we continue. Classification and measurement. For something